this meeting, the last one of 2019, of the Plans Committee for Charnwood Borough Council. There are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start with the items on the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded and the sound recording will be made available on the Council's website. Under the Openness of Local Government Bodies regulations, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting should do so in a way that does not disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, could I ask everyone present to please turn off your mobile phones or switch them to silent. Anybody that doesn't do that and the phone goes off, there's a £5 fine to the Mayor's charity. Thank you. We are not expecting any fire alarm tests this evening, so if the alarms sound, please proceed to the nearest fire exits, which are situated to the side and the rear of the meeting room. Toilets are available and these can be found through the doors at the back and to the side. And can I remind everyone that this is a public meeting, so please conduct yourself in an appropriate manner. Thank you very much. Now what I shall be doing, you'll see us here on the top table, we're looking down there, that's because we have a copy of the screen that's there, is also there for us. Also, when I speak, as you see, I've pressed a button and it comes on. If people who are speaking, and particularly for or against certain applications, there is a time limit, and after 1 minute, I will remind everybody, when you've only got 1 minute left, you will hear, and that means you've only got 1 minute, and I will cut you off straight away after that. So we now move on to the business of the meeting. Do we have any apologies? No?
So, Chair, I'm very happy to say we have no apologies this evening.
Great. Thank you very much indeed. The minutes of the meeting held on the 21st of November, can I confirm those as a correct record?
You can, Chair.
Thank you. There are no questions under Committee Procedure 12.8. Sorry. Thank you. Disclosures of pecuniary and personal interest.
Councillor Grimley. Thank you, Chair. Item number one, declare personal interest. Previously, at a former practice, architectural practice, I have worked with Wilson Bowden about 10 years ago, so certainly have no working relationship with them for a long time. So I'm here with a open mind on that one. Item number three, also professionally have worked with the speaker for the applicant tonight on occasions. Again, not discussed any of this application with him, and here with an open mind. Just unfortunately working in architectural practice, I do sometimes work with a lot of these people, but have no ongoing sort of relationships. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Is there anybody else? Councillor Snart.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a personal interest on item 1, P1905242. I have a family member that works for the Barrett Group. However, I've not discussed this application. He's not been involved, and I retain an open mind.
Thank you very much. Is there anybody else?
Just for clarity, Chair, if I may. Item one, are we treating this as a new application? Because I believe all members received various emails and correspondence on the last application, the last time this was put to plans.
Councillor Lowe, if I can just move to the officer here who will clarify, and you should all be here with a completely open mind If you feel you have any slight predetermination or anything like that, you may want to consider whether you should take part in the discussion of item one. I'll ask our officer here to clarify.
Yeah, I'm going to cover that a bit in the presentation anyway, but members, if you recall, resolved to defer it for an item for the issue of access to be looked at again. That's been done. It's covered in the report. That's what the decision was. So it's for members to consider the application as a whole again. All correspondence received have been wound into the current application. Do you want me to carry on? So
Everybody is here. We're in absolutely clear mind, forgotten everything else we ever said. Thank you.
So, the planning application has been brought to Plans Committee as it relates to a major strategic proposal which is of significant public interest. Members will be aware that the application was previously presented to Plans Committee on the 21st of November, but was deferred at the request of members to enable the applicant time to consider a single point of access onto Snelsnook Lane for the development rather than two points of access. The applicant has considered this request and undertaken an assessment. As described at the beginning of the committee report, the proposal remains as it was when it was presented to the Plans Committee last month. The reasons for this are detailed in the report and will be explained in detail by the planning officer later in their presentation. Members are reminded that the application relates to a strategic allocation. The allocation is part of the core strategy, and this plan has been through independent examination and is now has been adopted by the plans by the Borough Council and forms part of the development plan for Charnwood. This allocation is covered in the development plan policy CS23, and members should give this specific regard when considering the application. Full wording of policy CS23 is in the packs in front of you and is also referred to in full in the committee reports. Members are reminded that section 38(6) of the Planning Compulsory Purchase Act requires planning applications to be determined in accordance with the development plan unless material consideration indicates otherwise. This reference to material consideration normally relates to when a proposal is contrary to the development plan, but there are material planning reasons why the planning application should be approved. In addition to this, members are also reminded of paragraph 11 of the MPPF, which contains the presumption in favour of sustainable development. For decision taking, this means approving development proposals which accord with an up-to-date development plan without delay. Finally, before we move into the presentation in full, members will be aware there has been a significant amount of lobbying. As such, members should carefully consider if they have truly come to the committee with an open mind, and where they are unable to say they've come here tonight with a truly open mind, members should declare this and stand down from considering the application.
Thank you, Chair. So just to reiterate some of the points in front of you on the screen, I've deliberately left it up for a while, actually. So this is item one on the agenda with the planning reference and the full development description. We've talked about this quite a bit at the last meeting, but you've got the specific uses and the specific floor areas, and that development description will sit, if this gets approved, within the development documents for approval. The red line in front of you shows the application site. You have the 512 running across of west to east. You have the motorway off to the west. There's a footpath that runs down the side of the motorway and then comes across the back of the golf course and then on into Snelsnook Lane. You have Snelsnook Lane itself, and you members will be aware from, well, having visited the site twice now, of the undulating nature of the site. And you have the slightly higher land on the frontage, and then it dips down in and around the brook and I'll talk about this in a bit anyway, but you have the taller dwellings as covered by the parameters plans that sit in the natural dips in the site. On the opposite side of the road, in fact, on the opposite side of the works that are being done to the 512 and the new roundabout there, you have Garendon Park, within which there are some listed buildings, and we've talked about that at the previous meeting, but also that sits within the report itself in terms of the heritage assessment. There are no designated heritage assets on the application site itself. It hasn't come out that well on the big screen behind, but the purpose of this slide is purely to show where the counts were done in terms of the highways report that sit in the transport assessment. This is the detailed work that the County Council are leading on, and as I'm sure you're all aware, is happening now. So this is the roundabout that will form the northern access to the application site, and then you've got the dualling of the A512, and you can just see on the edge here the top of Snelsnook Lane, where there will also be some improvements. The other parts of the application then are for two points of access onto Snelsnook Lane. This is the northernmost access, slightly north of the lay-by that is positioned about halfway down Snelsnook Lane, and then this is the southern point of access, which is just a few hundred metres north of the point of access into the golf club. In front of you is the parameters plan. If approved, this would sit as an approved document that sits within the condition. This does two things. It controls the finished floor levels, and it also has the maximum ridge height specified, which any application, any reserve matters application that follows on from this would have to conform with. But essentially, it'll have the shorter ridge heights along the frontage. The dark blue is the bigger properties, which are about 50 metres, well, they're 50 metres maximum to the ridge height, as I say, that sit in the natural depressions. As a point of reference, the Phase 2 building that's currently underway on the other side of Snelsnook Lane is, well, it's about 17 metres to the top of the flat roof as a comparison. So that's the parameters plan. This is the phasing plan. As you can see, the development will work its way from west to east and front to back. And again, this plan would sit as an approved document, if you follow officer recommendation, as one of the approved documents, as a specific condition within the report. 1A and 2A are the ancillary hub, which I'll talk about in a minute, but the condition, as suggested in the report, states it has to follow the sequence of this. So in other words, 1A can't be built out until 1 has, and similarly, 2A can't be built out until 2, 1A and 1 have been built out. So that's the parameters plan. This is an indicative master plan, but just to repeat, this is an outline application for an allocated science and enterprise park for this half of the allocation, with three points of access, the first being the roundabout here, the second being that point, that new access onto Snelsnook Lane, and the third being this new point of access onto Snelsnook Lane just further down. I'll come on to this in a minute, actually, but this is to do with the flexible master plan, or Hawkins Brown, as is referred to in the officer's report. This is an extract from that, so I've zoomed in, and the red squares are the hub, as indicated in the Hawkins Brown master plan. And the red line here, as you would expect, is the application boundary. And what I'm showing here, hopefully, is that the red parts of this application proportionally form about half of the hub area for the whole site allocation. So on the previous parameters plan, 1A comes before 2, etc. So you have to build this out in accordance with this phasing plan. and the hub only forms proportionally half of the whole for the allocated site. Well, I'll leave the parameters plan. If I can just, I'm going to focus on highways to start off with and then go through in a little bit of detail what is included with the application and what is not, or in other words, what would sit within the reserve matters. So the applicant has considered a request by members to remove one point of access and have submitted a detailed letter from their consultants, BWB, which is appended in full to the committee report. The sections from that have been put in the update at the very beginning of the report, but the whole report, the whole letter from BWB is appended to the committee report. The comments from the Local Highway Authority are also contained in the updates. They've seen that letter from BWB, and the decision is to keep the two points of access for these key reasons. It would not result in any improvements to the operation of Snellsnook Lane, or in particular the Nampanton Crossroads. It could result in a deterioration in the operation of the Snellsnook Lane Ashby Road signal control junction. It could also prejudice the proposed hub at the northern access. It could reduce longer public transport options from the south, and it would require further assessment work to fully assess the impact of the removal of the southern access. That in particular will take some time, as any further traffic counts were going to be severely delayed because you can't do them at the moment with the amount of highways works that are being done to the 512. The emergency services would need to be consulted on a reduction in the number of accesses, and the proposal would not be consistent with the master plan with one point of access onto Snellsnook Lane. Throughout the application process, the Local Highway Authority have assessed the development proposal carefully to identify if its impacts would cause severe harm to the local network. The assessment was based on both strategic modelling using the Leicester and Leicestershire Integrated Transport Model, or LITM, we talked about that at the last meeting, and the local junction testing. This is particularly important given that local roads and junctions can be sensitive to variation in traffic flow, which can result in redistribution of traffic. Broadly, the modelling identified improves the results in the distribution of traffic and the improvements being constructed at the M1 motorway junction 23 and on the A512 would assist in keeping trips on the most appropriate routes. It's also worth bearing in mind that development only has to mitigate its own impact and not solve the existing highways problems. As detailed in the Local Highway Authority response of the 14th of August 2019, it is considered that the development can be mitigated and therefore does not cause severe harm and does not conflict with paragraph 109 of the National Planning Policy Framework. The Local Highway Authority understands the concerns raised in relation to the capacity at Nampanton Crossroads, and to make the development acceptable in highways terms, a contribution towards improvements at Nampanton Road, Snellsnook Lane, Signal Junction is secured via Section 106 agreement. That, again, is detailed in Recommendation A, which covers the Section 106 obligations in full, well, the heads of terms. The proposed planning conditions and obligations also allow for a degree of flexibility for the two proposed T-junctions on Snellsnook Lane. To allow the junctions to be upgraded to roundabouts, should that be required, and to proportionally mitigate for any future highway restrictions on that part of Snellsnook Lane. Planning condition 18, as detailed in Recommendation B, states that Phase 1A cannot be occupied. That's the next one. Went the wrong way. So, Planning Condition A states that Phase 1A cannot be occupied until the northern access onto Snellsnook Lane, so that one, has been implemented. And Condition 5 states that the development shall be built out in sequence in accordance with the phasing plan, which is in front of you, with the development to be built out from west to east and front to back, as I've said. In accordance with conditions 18 and 19, indications are that the northern access onto Snellsnook Lane will be built out at approximately 5 years from the date of decision, and the southern access built out, again, approximately 10 years from that same date. It is therefore considered that the necessary planning conditions and obligations are in place to ensure that the development is built out in an appropriate manner without detriment to the highway. So the concerns of members in relation to the highway's impact of the development are understood. but it is considered that there is no evidential basis to refuse the application on highways grounds, and in particular, no basis to refuse the application in regard to the proposed two points of access onto Snelsnook Lane. For the reasons given, it is not considered necessary or appropriate to seek removal of one of the proposed points of access onto Snelsnook Lane. As I said earlier, so for the purposes of clarity, I need to emphasise what is part of the proposal and is therefore up for determination and what is not. So firstly, what is up for determination? Well, the principle of the development for Science Park use, as detailed in the development description, which was on the first slide, and as controlled by the suggested conditions and obligations. And secondly, the three points of access that I've indicated. That's it. So it's an outline application with the principle and the three points of access. As has been said already by officers, members are reminded that the site forms part of the strategic objectives for the borough. The site is mentioned in Core Strategy 1, and the site has a specific allocation in the Core Strategy Policy CS23 for an extension to Science and Enterprise Park. With the site allocation, it is considered that the site already has one level of support, and with this outline application seeking a further level of support, and the reserve matters applications providing the final level of detail. So that's what is for determination. So the second question then is, what is reserved for later consideration? So what are the reserved matters? Firstly, external appearance. Policy CS23 seeks to provide a science and enterprise park that provides high quality and innovation in the form of the layout of the development, building and green space. Any reserved matters application for the external appearance would have to conform with the development plan, and in particular, the part of CS23 I've just quoted. To reflect this, Condition 3 adds another layer of control by requiring any reserved matters application, and that's any reserved matters application, to be accompanied by a design and access statement. There is no basis to refuse this application on the basis of poor design. It is considered that subject to conditions, a suitable design can be achieved, but this would need to be brought forward as part of the reserve matters submission for the development to be considered within the aims and the objectives of the policies. Secondly, then, landscaping. As stated, landscaping is an important requirement of CS23. Further to Condition 2, which is the standard condition where you list out the reserve matters requirements, and Condition 3, which I've already talked about, where any reserve matters needs to be accompanied by a design and access statement, Condition 7 has extra requirements for landscaping details that need to be included on any reserve matters, and Condition 10 seeks to ensure the site provides at least 40% green infrastructure. There is no landscaping reason to refuse this application, as it does not form part of this proposal, and it is considered that subject to the planning conditions in front of you, a landscape scheme can be achieved that balances the existing landscape conditions with further mitigation. Again, this would need to be brought forward as part of a future reserve matters submission for the development to be considered in accordance with the policies or not. Thirdly, layout. An indicative master plan, as on the screen now, has been submitted with the application, but it is indicative only and would not form part of the suite of approved drawings if approved. Condition 4 requires compliance with the submitted parameters plan, and Condition 5 requires compliance with the submitted phasing plan, as I've already described. There is no reason, based on layout, to refuse this application, as it does not form part of the proposal. However, it is considered that a suitable layout could be achieved that could be capable of delivering a high-quality development, but this would need to be brought forward as part of a future reserve matters submission for those issues to be considered. Finally, scale. Condition 4 requires compliance with the parameters plan, which in turn specifies the finished floor level and maximum ridge heights for each phase, with the lower ridge heights along the frontage and the larger ridge heights set further back from the site frontage and on the lower land. As a point of reference, the maximum ridge height proposed on plots 6... I need to go back. The maximum ridge height on plots 6, 10 and 12 is 15 metres, so that's the dark blue, compared to the access building which we've seen today when we went past being built on phase two of the existing science park, which is about 17 metres to the top of the flat roof. There is no reason based on scale to refuse this application, as it is considered that subject to planning conditions, development of an appropriate scale can be achieved. But as I've said already, this would need to be brought forward as part of a future reserve matters submission for the development to be considered if it accords with the policies or not. So that's what's not part of the application. That's what does form part of the application. I've got two more things to go over, if you bear with me. Firstly, the hub. And I've talked around this slide already. Members have expressed concerns about, I think, three things: the retail impact, the non-ancillary use, and the location of the hub. With your leave, I shall deal with these three in turn. Firstly, policy CS9 requires a retail impact assessment for proposals for main town centre uses in edge of centre or out of centre locations where the gross floor area proposed is above 1,000 square metres. Policy CS23 provides for appropriate ancillary uses to serve the Science and Enterprise Park and requires that any main town centre uses are in accordance with the same policy, CS9. The Council has received two statements from the applicant regarding town centre uses and other town centre uses. So that includes the food, the drink, gym, hotel and all the other remaining ancillary uses. And it should be noted that as this floor area falls below the threshold, there is no actual requirement to undertake these retail assessments, but all the ancillary development has been fully assessed. The total ancillary use for this site, just this application site only, equates to approximately 9.6% of the overall business use. The retail assessments conclude that the ancillary uses will not detrimentally impact on the town centre uses. Again, it is considered that subject to planning conditions, the hub will serve the Science and Enterprise extension without impacting on the economy of the town centre and remain wholly ancillary to the main Science and Enterprise Park. This would need to be brought forward as part of a reserve matters submission for the development to be considered in accordance with the policy or not. Secondly, the concern that the use is not ancillary. Condition 5 requires the development to be built out in accordance with the phasing plan. Therefore, the first half of the hub cannot be built out before phase 1. I'll just go back to that. I'll just repeat that then. So condition 5 requires the development to be built out in accordance with the phasing plan that's in front of you. And therefore, the first half of the hub cannot be built out before phase 1 is completed. So in other words, 1A on here on the screen. And the second half of the hub, which is 2A on the screen, cannot be built out before phase 2. The phasing plan shows that the hub for this site will be built out in parts, as I've said, 1A and 2A. Obligation 8 seeks to control, so that sits in the recommendation A, but Obligation 8 seeks to control the approved uses to not allow changes of use within the same use class that might otherwise be permitted. Obligation 9 specifies the floor area for each use, and Obligation 11 seeks to ensure the proportionate build-out of the ancillary hub. With the stated conditions and obligations, it's considered that the ancillary use would have several layers of control to ensure the hub remains ancillary and that the hub is not built out of sequence to the main Science and Enterprise Park. Thirdly and finally for this part, the exact footprint and format of the hub is for consideration on any reserve matters application, but the location, as indicated, is in accordance with the Hawkins-Brown flexible framework. And as I've said, it forms approximately half of the ancillary uses that will serve the whole site. There's a question raised about the clarity of the plan. The application site is within the allocated site for the extension of the Science and Enterprise Park, as defined in policy CS23. It is considered that the layout, development plots and green infrastructure, as indicated on the illustrative master plan submitted with the outline planning application, accord with the principles of CS23 and the Hawkins Brown Concept Master Plan Framework. Further, these can be controlled by planning conditions for future reserve matters applications and by planning obligations secured in the Section 106 legal agreement. In terms of the access, the submitted details accord with the broad aims of the Flexible Development Framework Plan provided by the Hawkins Brown Framework. And as such, it's considered that the application is acceptable in principle and accords with the fundamental aims of policies CS1 and CS23. The proposal is therefore considered to be well thought out and with conditions and obligations that will ensure the clarity and a policy-compliant development as and when that comes forward with any future reserve matters application. In conclusion, the key considerations, actually before I jump to that, these are some cross-sections through the site, showing the undulating nature of the site and where the larger properties will go. Where I'm circling here is the Temple of Venus, and that's the viewpoint for those photos that are just coming up now. So that's a viewpoint looking across the site as is. That's the development superimposed with the indicative master plan. That's the footprint of the building there, rising up to the maximum ridge heights. That's a future one as it's grown out, and that's a further one. So the key considerations, as detailed in the slide in front of you, were discussed at the November's Planning Committee meeting and are covered in full in the officer's report that sits in front of you. The application proposal seeks outline permission for an extension to the Science and Enterprise Park with the points of access detailed and all other matters retained for further reserve matters applications. The site is allocated for this use in the adopted core strategy with a detailed list of policy requirements. And that policy is copied on page 28 of your report in full for your information. The concerns expressed about the potential for downgrading of the site are noted, but the proposal is considered to accord with the key aims of policy CS23. There are strict controls proposed for the use, phasing, finished floor level and ridge height. Members are again reminded to deal with the planning merits of the application, as it is not considered any basis for refusal on whether the developer and future uses would accord with the conditions and obligations suggested in recommendation A and B. Having considered the application submission, all consultation responses and the views of neighbouring and nearby residents and the ward member, it is considered that the proposals accord to the planning policy and the recommendation as reported in the officer's report stands as is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Now, that is obviously a very full report, which we'll come to discussion shortly. We have a number of speakers. We have Mr. Wade on behalf of the objectors, Mr. Ward on behalf of the applicant, and the councillor, Councillor Smidowich, on behalf of as the councillor, ward councillor. So, Mr. Wade, if you would like to come forward. I think you are probably used to this. You have, you will be, as I said earlier, when you have 1 minute left, you will hear. And when the lights go red, it is stop, whether it's mid-sentence or anything, I'm afraid. So it's a red, green and amber. Green, okay. Amber, you've got a minute. And red, please stop. Thank you very much.
First of all, I would like to state that I am speaking on behalf of and representing the individuals who expressed a desire to speak at this meeting. I also have the support of the Nampanton Ward Residence Group. Please note that I have a degree in civil engineering. I'm a member of the Institution of Civil Engineers. Have previously worked as a highways engineer, including working as a highways engineer for Leicestershire County Council. So I have expertise in this matter. I'm aware that the question regarding the provision of one access onto Snelsmith Lane has been considered and documentation provided. but this option has been discounted, though no supporting traffic modelling data has been provided. So we are left to consider the original proposal. I will move on. I shall start with the transport assessment. I am extremely disappointed with the quality of the transport assessment, and it is, of course, critical that members are provided with accurate information without omissions. So that good decisions can be made. Excuse me. Let me clarify. There are many issues. The traffic modelling is based on a strategic assessment with manual junction modelling. Within the document is a recommendation for more detailed modelling. This hasn't been done. There is no driver delay data in the transport assessment, which best practice dictates is a key consideration. The transport assessment moved from data to conclusion with no detailed analysis. The Ashby Road Snelsnock Lane Junction, the Ashby Road Eppinall Way Junction, and the Snelsnock Lane Nanpanton Road Junction are all predicted to run over capacity. Queues are described as being kilometres in length. Numbers such as the minus 14% for the best case scenario at the Priory Crossroads miraculously appear with no supporting evidence. Mitigation measures have not been substantiated with appropriate metrics. At the very least, the transport assessment should be subject to an independent audit. I shall move on to the local plan. CS23 deals with this proposal and refers to CS18, which deals with the road network. CS18 requires that the obligations of the transport assessment are met, but CS18 also requires that traffic improvement is achieved. There is no traffic improvement, just the opposite. CS23 also refers to CS16, which deals with the environment. CS16 requires the support of renewable energy. This point has been ignored. Now on to the NPPF. The NPPF states that development should be refused where traffic impact is severe, as is the case here. Note that the transport assessment describes the traffic impact as severe. The NPPF is being ignored with respect to this point. In summary, there are significant issues with the transport assessment. The proposal does not comply with the local plan, and key elements of the NPPF have been ignored. You know, sometimes you have to take a step back and look at what you're doing. This proposal is completely ludicrous. How can this proposal be accepted? Finally, should this proposal be accepted, I shall request a public inquiry as determined by the Inquiries Act 2005 by contacting the relevant government minister. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wade. We now have Mr. David Ward. Thank you very much, Mr. Ward. Again, the same principle applies. The timing starts when you start speaking, and I will buzz if you get to 1 minute left. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members, for the opportunity to speak. My name is David Ward. I'm Planning Director of Wilson Bowden Developments. We are the applicants for this scheme. I sat before you 4 weeks ago and took you through some of the history, the long engagement and consultation that we undertook with the council itself here, with Loughborough University, with the statutory consultees, and I am delighted that we have arrived at a position where all of those bodies have seen and considered our application, because I believe that this application before you tonight is a very significant economic step in the development of Charnwood Borough and in the development of Leicestershire as a county. And I think it should have significant weight because it is an application that is supported by your own policy. Following the deferral, members, we went away and gave consideration to the removal of the access from Snelsnock Lane. And as you have already heard, that has been discounted on a number of grounds. But I want to assure you that it was given serious consideration before it was discounted. And indeed, the matters for discounting it have been set out clearly to you, both in the written report and in the officer report to you tonight. Just a word to respond to the concerns that have just been raised by Mr. Wade on behalf of the objectors. Those are very much focused on traffic and transport grounds, and indeed I know that members had concerns expressed at the last meeting in their debate. I just want to say here that this has been very carefully considered, and I do indeed refute the points that evidence has not been put before the council on this matter. It has. The transport assessment has been very carefully assessed over a long period by the experts at Leicestershire County Council and moreover at Highways England, and be assured that that process was lengthy and vigorous. And their conclusions are absolutely clear that the development before you tonight is satisfactory in terms of its impact, provided the mitigation measures are undertaken. And again, conditions and obligations assure that that will happen. And indeed, one of those matters referred to in the report is the contribution of £1.8 million towards the development of the ongoing works to create the access into the site, which is already underway and which has already attracted £17 million of public sector funding. And that is a very significant consideration in terms of the development of this important strategic site. And so, members, I conclude by saying to you this. This is a very important matter. It is a strategic site which this council has supported through the pages of its adopted plan. And we have worked tirelessly and vigorously with your members, with the stakeholders, and with those who perhaps have not seen eye to eye with what we have been proposing. But what you have before you, endorsed by your officers, is a report which confirms that the development is in accordance with your plan. In such circumstances, the law makes it very clear that determinations should result in following the terms of the development plan. And unless there are clear material reasons, very clear, that are supported by evidence which dictate otherwise, then the determination should be in accordance with your own plan. I commend the application to your members, and I hope that you will be able to support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ward. Councillor Spinovich. Okay, thank you.
Good evening, members. I urge you today, once again, to either defer or reject this application. Tonight, I'm speaking on behalf of the Vice-Chancellor of Loughborough University and his team, who have today advised me that they have deposited £20 million with a holding account and that they have signed for the purchase of the land before you. The funds would have been released this afternoon, but I understand that Wilson Bowden employees were having their Christmas lunch, so they may not have got back in time to sign their part, or they have been deliberately done.
Sorry, Councillor, I just need to take a bit of advice, please. Land ownership isn't something that we... Land ownership isn't something we are here to consider. We're considering the planning application. And I think I have to stop that and make that perfectly clear. The application in front of you is what you need to consider. And, you know, what's happening to do with private land purchases doesn't affect the current planning application before you. So what I understand is that if you do continue with about the land purchase, councillor, then we must ask this committee not to build that into any decision they make, as we are not here as to ownership, land purchase, future. We are here just to discuss the application itself and not about land ownership. So what I'm saying is, if you wanted to finish your statement, I must ask the committee to discount it. If you would like to continue, but as long as it's nothing to do with land purchase, land ownership, just the items we're looking at.
I quite understand, sir.
Thank you.
So the university wishes to develop, continue to develop the science park in the spirit of the original concept of a truly great science park. It will not be a speculative application which would jeopardise the whole venture. There has been extensive assumptions made of what is acceptable, and it will inhibit much of the university phased development plan, particularly in relation to the vehicular access, which may well require a compulsory purchase order to go onto the university land on the opposite side of Snell's Look Lane. The application is contrary to CS23 and TR18, and though the master plan is mentioned, the Hawkins-Brown report was not formally adopted by the local planning authority as a supplementary planning guidance, according to one of your officers. The number of points of access onto Snell's Nook Lane that form part of the application before you was a choice of the applicant. You need to make a decision on the planning merits. It does not accord with CS2, and it does not make a positive contribution to Charnwood or a sense of place. CS11 states that new development must reinforce the sense of place and local distinctiveness. The inspector made it clear that all amenities should be ancillary to the Science and Enterprise Park. The junction currently operates significantly over capacity, and in the future, without development traffic, the junction is anticipated to operate significantly over capacity. 14% was given for the best scenario, and this situation is significantly exacerbated when the entire location is tested. The local highways authority reported on the 14th of August that there will be a severe impact with queues extending kilometres. The MPPF states that development should be refused where the traffic impact is severe, and this has been ignored. Please remember the heritage and the character of the area. We are talking about a lane with the dictionary definition as a narrow road, typically in a rural area, exactly what it is. I reiterate, this is a unique, once-in-a-generation opportunity for Charnwood to establish itself as the centre of the 21st century knowledge-based industries, which should offer and could offer Loughborough international recognition and 9,000 well-paid jobs. This is nothing like the application before you today. It will have an impact on the town, most people believe who have looked at it. So I urge you to reject this application until we can get a plan for a complete science and enterprise park, which will be even greater than Cambridge University. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. That is the end of the speakers. I will now pass back to the planning officer for the moment before we go into discussion.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to pick up on a few points. Members did hear at the beginning of that speech some reference to speculative statements, assumptions and hearsay. We have to work on the facts in front of us. Competition and possible impacts on future applications when they relate to private land ownership interests aren't a matter for consideration here today. What you're considering is the proposal for half a science and enterprise park allocation. There is a there is the flexible framework plan that was commissioned by the authority that this sits in accordance with, and you have to consider it on the basis of the application in front of you, not anything that might be happening with land deals or who you'd prefer to develop it out. That's nothing for consideration here. I do believe my colleague wants to pick up on some of the highways issues raised as well.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. There were several questions raised. I'll probably go through them in turn. In terms of the highways, I would suggest it's important to read the Local Highways Authority response in full. When you start from the beginning, it describes the site, it goes through the impacts. It does describe them in a negative way in moments, and it then also describes the mitigation. In the conclusion of their report from the Local Highways Authority, and I'm going to read this in full, it's only a short paragraph. The residual cumulative impacts of development traffic on the road network are predicted to be severe, okay, and can be cost-effectively mitigated to an acceptable degree in accordance with the MPPF. So nobody's denying or ignoring the transport assessment. Nobody's ignoring the fact that there will be impacts. What we're saying, or rather what the Local Highways Authority is saying, is that can be mitigated and can be mitigated successfully. I'll carry on. This development proposed is a core policy objective allocated in Charnwood Borough Council's local plan. It poses a number of transport challenges, and the Local Highway Authority advises the Local Planning Authority that, subject to conditions and obligations highlighted through these observations, the development proposals are acceptable. And the conditions and obligations, as recommended by the Local Highways Authority, sit within the report in recommendation A and B. But very briefly, if I can just skim through them. Condition 12 is about the implementation of the A512 access. Condition 18 is about the phasing of the north access onto Snelsnook Lane, and that's after phase one's been completed. Condition 19 is to do with the second access onto Snelsnook Lane. Condition 20 is the motorway, the M1 works, which obviously is off-site. Condition 21 is Ashby Road works, and then condition 22 is the implementation of the footway from the southern access, essentially near the entrance to the golf club down to Nampanton Crossroads. 24 is for a site-wide transport plan. 26 relates to transport strategy. Then within the obligations, so within the legal agreement, the first obligation is relating to travel packs. Second is relating to bus passes. Again, the third one relates to site-wide travel plan. Obligation four is almost £290,000 towards improvements to Nampanton Crossroads. Delivery of the A512 roundabout is obligation five. Obligation six relates to reserving the points of access onto Snelsnook Lane if in the future they are required to become roundabouts. And obligation seven relates to the potential for any traffic regulation orders from the southern access onto Snelsnook Lane north up to the A512, then a proportional cost will be met by the applicant. So there's also the fact that Highways England have raised no objections, and the suggested condition sits again within the recommendation. So the applicant has had to answer an awful lot of questions from both the statutory agencies. It took a while in getting these, but we're now in a situation where both statutory bodies, so the Local Highways Authority and Highways England, have no objections subject to the conditions and obligations that sit within the officer recommendation. As an aside, and on top of some of the other comments, condition 8 relates to BREEAM, so Building Research Environmental Assessment Method, and there are other environmental conditions relating to noise attenuation in 30 and lighting, etc. So I would suggest there's a full set of conditions here and a framework of conditions and obligations, as I've said in my presentation at the beginning, that mean that any further reserve matters application can successfully achieve the aims and, in fact, probably go even beyond the aims of policy CS23.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to focus on traffic issues. The A512 can't cope with the traffic that it currently has to cope with at peak times. And we know already that the Garendon development is going to put more pressure on the 512. And there is no doubt that if we support this project, that will put additional pressure on the 512, and that's not to mention the change of character that will undoubtedly happen to Snelsnook Lane as a result of this development. I'm not going to say any more at this point. I'm going to leave it for others to speak.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Councillor Leth.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Well, I've listened to all the arguments, and I don't normally jump in quite so quick on this one, but I can see no reason why we should go against officer recommendation, so I'm going to move officer recommendation.
I'll second that recommendation.
Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I'm really surprised that it's been proposed and seconded already, actually, and it's not been debated, because this is quite a large application that will affect thousands and tens of thousands of people in that area. I'm very disappointed that Highways aren't here, because I thought we'd requested for Highways to be here to answer questions specifically to Highways, and I can't understand why they're not here. Are they scared?
We can presume that, Councillor.
What, the scared bit?
No. I think the officer will explain.
Thank you.
Okay, it isn't county standard practice to send officers to Plans Committee. That's what their procedures are. We did formally write to them, advising them that you had requested their attendance, and they declined, saying that they were unable to get to this committee.
Thank you for that reply. Also, we keep referring to CS23. Now, when I read CS23, provides for uses directly related to the university's own operational activities, including teaching, research, development, administration, student accommodation and sports facilities. I've not seen that in this application. So, therefore, why are we keep referring to CS23 when it's not actually in the application?
CS23, you have to read as a whole, so it can provide those uses, but it can also provide for development of businesses operating directly in the delivery of a range of knowledge-based sectors, which is what this application is seeking to do. Obviously, there is parts of the other site, and what that first point does, and what the examiner in the examination in public was doing, was retaining the ability for the university to put other uses, not just sites and enterprise park uses on there, but we're confident that the uses proposed do fall within, or we can control them so that they will fall in these knowledge-based sector science park uses.
Thank you, Chair. I just draw members' attention to recommendation A and obligations 8, 9 and 10, in particular 10. A definition of knowledge-based sector to be cross-referenced with a condition. So there's a condition that says that there must be knowledge-based, and that restricts the B1 and B2 uses of that as defined in the Section 106 agreement. We talked about this last committee. It's an extraordinary site for two reasons, I would suggest. The amount of green infrastructure on the site and the particular use, as you've mentioned, so the science and enterprise use and the knowledge-based sector, as defined in CS23. For those reasons, there are several layers of control that, in my experience, you wouldn't normally get on an application such as this. But that's for good reason. It's to ensure that we do conform with CS23. So in answer to your question, we haven't got that level of detail, but that's to be thrashed out between the two legal sides to make sure that there's a knowledge-based sector definition that will work and accord with CS23. I have got a draft, but it's not being seen by either side, so I wouldn't like to... I mean, I could perhaps talk through it, but I wouldn't like you to sort of pin everything on that. I don't know if that's of use or not. I hope so.
I may come back on that, Chair. I'm just concerned that I understand that all we're agreeing tonight is the access points and, you know, the way that it will be developed. I just think that we're going to load a gun here and it's going to bolt and we're not going to be able to stop it, even with everything that you've put into place.
Just to be clear, it's the principle of development you're approving as well, and that will include the uses. So the uses in the description are tied, which are science and enterprise uses, and we're also recommending that the uses are controlled again through the obligation. So it is the use. You know, I don't want members to think that's not part of the consideration, but they're tied to science and enterprise uses and this knowledge-based sector. So that is part of the consideration.
Thank you, Councillor Tassel.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to look at recommendation A. I'm really concerned about it. Have the officers been in touch with any of the bus companies to ask what buses are going to service this particular development? Because they're offering six-month bus passes, travel plans and everything else. Has anything been put in place or suggested, or have you been in touch with the bus companies for this? Because nothing has been mentioned. I'm rather concerned that it's going to be another car-orientated development. The second thing that I'm worried about is the fact is what has been put into place to stop general employment on this site. We're saying it's going to be for science and scientific research and everything to do with the university. But what has been put in place to stop anybody from putting anything on that site? Are there any laws? Have any laws been put into place so somebody can't come and buy a building and put just what they want on it? I'm very, very concerned about this because I was under the impression right from the word go that this was going to be part of the university, and now it's come along that it's another developer altogether, and I am really, really concerned about it.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Tassel, I think there are essentially two parts to your question. There is the have there been any discussions to do with bus companies and bus passes, and secondly, to do with the control of the use. If I take them in order... Office of the Council, or certainly planning officers, no, we haven't been speaking with them, but within the transport assessment, BWB, the consultants, have undergone that, and that's where this has come from. The Local Highway Authority have obviously read in quite some detail the transport assessment, and the recommendations and some of the mitigations put forward by BWB are reflected in the conditions and the obligations. One of the reasons why the northern access onto Snellslick Lane could not be removed is because that's where the bus route potentially will go. It will come along the A512, drop down, if you're going east to west, or then drop down Snellslick Lane and then come along the lower part and then back up to the roundabout and across to the motorway in Shepshed. In terms of the control of the use, it's not essential that this is the university that operates this site. What is essential is that they operate within the constrictions of policy CS23 and the conditions and obligations as recommended in the report. If they can comply with all of those, if they can conform with all of those, then we have both a satisfactory development that accords with it and a development that proceeds probably at some pace. I won't repeat some of the conditions I said, but there are several layers of control above and beyond what you would normally expect for an outline application for such as this.
So just to make that a little bit easier for members to understand, the controls that Nigel are talking about means that if a general industrial provider company came along and tried to occupy the site, they'd be in breach of those controls, and we could take action against them under planning controls because they would be breaching their obligations in the 106 that require it to be occupied as a knowledge-based sector, which is exactly the same sort of controls we've already got on the first two phases of the Science and Enterprise Park, because obviously they're occupied whilst they might have been originally applied for as part of the university applications. They're actually occupied by private businesses, so they've got the same controls as what we're proposing on this site. So those science park uses are retained at all times.
But if the company that buys a building or has a building put up, I don't know how they're going to do this, whether they're going to do it by selling a plot and letting someone put the building up or developing the site, I don't know. We haven't gone into that yet. But supposing someone does start it off as a research and development scientific business and then they want to sell up, what is going to be able to stop them from going in and buying, selling it to general industry?
Those controls can stay with the land. So it's exactly the same as what's on phase one and two of the existing Science and Enterprise Park. Developer businesses do grow, especially in the innovation scale units, and they do move on, and other businesses will buy them. But in order to buy them and continue the use, they would have to meet the obligations and controls that go with the land, which are bound under the controls that we're suggesting in recommendation A. So that's not, if they'd have to, that control stays with the council, that there would have to be a Science and Enterprise Park use.
Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. I pick the point that Councillor Tillotson was making. I was going to mention that I've worked on a number of larger sites in the past that have had master plan controls attached to them, and those have worked quite well to keep the intended use, particularly in Market Harbour on the innovation centre site, which was put in place to provide innovation centre and growth and smaller businesses. So the councils do I think have controls on those side of things, which I think is good. The other item I was going to pick up was on the highways. It's sort of very, very difficult for us to go against the recommendations from the various statutory bodies. They are certainly the highways in England and Leicestershire County are sort of independent experts on this. So I think that's something that I find very sort of difficult that we can object on those sorts of grounds. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Grimley. Councillor Ransom.
Good evening, Chair. Thank you very much. Can I have two clarities here? The fact is, this is part of our core strategy. Am I correct? Yes. And also that NHS England, but I meant the actual road people Highways England, sorry, I've got one track mind really, has not had any objections, neither has our local authority, our LCC, has had no objections. That's one clarity I want to make. The second clarity I want to make, the Enterprise Park is going to generate some employment, am I not correct in that? I know there will be a footfall there in both bits and pieces of of pathways to driving and that, but hopefully we're supposed to be going to a green-based scenario in the future. This is a long way in the future, am I correct? So consequently, on those aspects, how are we at liberty to refuse this recommendation because of all the strategic people have been involved and re-involved. Please give me some answers. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. So it's firstly, yes, it is an allocated site within the core strategy. The application site, as outlined in red on the slide in front of you, is actually half of the allocated site. The remainder is on the other side to the east, adjacent to phases 1 and 2 of the existing sites in Enterprise Park. Secondly, the Highways England and local highway authority, so the county, have no objections. Do not underestimate the difficulty of getting a no objection letter from Highways England. Thirdly, the enterprise zone regeneration, yes, yeah, that's obviously, but that doesn't actually form part of this. It overlaps this site, the enterprise zone, but it's, and I think that was your questions answered. Oh.
And then I think the final one was about if you weren't to go against offer recommendation, what could you do it on? That's obviously for members to come up with. I mean, officers, I think, have been very clear in our professional advice within the report.
Could I also, if the committee were of a mind to recommend this through officers' recommendation, are we going to be assured for the residents and for every general public that they will be conscious in their due diligence of everything that all the recommendations, please? I would like that noted. Thank you, if that's possible.
Councillor Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. I just wondered, is the land outside the development site, would that be safe in future from development, please?
Well, I can't obviously speak about applications that aren't in front of us. As you know, we have to consider all applications that come in front of us. You can see if you turn to the plan associated with CS3, the outline of the allocation, and this doesn't extend beyond the outline of the allocation towards the motorway. Obviously, it only includes half. There will always be new development plans, but they'll be to be adopted by the council, and there's due process for that. But as the current development plan stands, this is within that allocation.
Thanks for that. The reason I ask is then, so the retail park could be expanded. That's all I'm thinking, you see.
I think, if I may, councillor, it is not a retail park. I expect you'd like to rephrase that, because what we're looking at is not a retail park. It's
I was just reading about the hotel, gyms, banks, shops, and conference centre. So they won't be expanded.
That is only on the. Oh, sorry.
We can be quite clear. We're controlling the amount of use. Those sort of uses are ancillary, and they are allowed for in the adopted development plan, but they have to remain ancillary. As we've said, this is just over 9% of the proposed floor area here, and we're controlling that amount. Now, what's going to happen on the other half, we don't know yet, but if it was to go above what would be considered ancillary, then members would have to make that judgment at that time when that application's in front of you. You can only consider what's in front of you now, which is a development with ancillary uses that has a total floor area of just over 9%.
Thank you, Chair. Just to go over then, so the parameters plan in front of you will fix the finished floor level and the maximum ridge height. Which one? The phasing plan now, it has to be built out in accordance with that. Then there'll be obligations that restrict the specific uses, and that's particularly important for the ancillary hub uses, because as you're probably aware, there are certain changes that you can do within those use classes. We're going to restrict that. There's a fix on the floor areas, so for each of the uses, but in particular the ancillary uses in the hub. And as I said already with a debate with Councillor Lowjust, there will be a definition on the knowledge-based sector, and they will have to conform with those obligations and those conditions that sit within the all of the conditions that sit within the recommendation. So there's several layers of control.
Right. We've had a... Oh, Councillor Snart.
Sorry, I thought the... you'd got that. Could I just ask for you, Madam Chairman, could the officers define for me a B2 use? I notice in 10 of the recommendation A, B1 and 2 uses that are defined in the S106. We don't know what that'll be, but it would be interesting because I think it is something that we have seen concern about tonight. So it's really defining B2, and may I come back?
Thank you, Chair. So, Councillor Snart, this is an indication of what is likely to sit within application 10 of the 106. So it would be something on lines of high and medium technology and manufacturing, communications, financial and professional services, consulting, creative and culture industries, space industries, advanced manufacturing, engineering, research and development, advanced logistics and employment and life sciences, which is education and health. There'll be various caveats to that, etc., but that's the direction we're going in with those specific uses.
I understand that. What I'm after is what is defined in B2 when you look at it as policy.
If you look at the B2 use class, which I think that is what you're doing, that would be general industry. That's why you need the extra controls that we're proposing in Recommendation A to make sure that you only have the B2 uses that form part of the knowledge base so that it's truly a science and enterprise park. That's why you need those controls as part of the obligations which are included, because if we just left it as B2, we wouldn't have the control, and that's why we would need to secure the uses as sort of defined by Nigel within the obligations. Nigel will just pick up on the exact wording, though.
Yeah, thank you. If I may, within the use class B2, there are three categories, B1A, B1B and B1C, and as is drafted at the moment, and I talked about Obligation 9 where we would restrict the floor areas, those B1A, B1B and B1C, in fact, and B2, would be specified. So they'd have to conform with that. And that data is from the data used to model the traffic impact.
I'm sorry to go on, Madam Chairman. Would it be then that we need to put in B2, you say there's subsections of that, do we need to actually say which subsections that we're talking about when we're talking about B2 uses?
You're asking if we need to put those subsections in as part of the conditions?
You're absolutely correct, Madam Chairman. What I want is some sort of assurance that we've got the right things going into this area. And I think if we've just got B2, we've got to look then and say, well, we've got to enforce it. If we can make it clearer within that usage group, and you're saying that, I would be delighted.
Ms Jackson. Are you looking at the top of page 29 where it says... We do not want to see the science part used for general blah, blah, blah. Thank you.
Yes, so the top of that page is a direct quote from the policy. And then if you go to page 48, which includes the obligations, you'll see the obligations that we're suggesting you control under 9 and 10 will do what you're saying. So that they will restrict what is in B B1 and B2 uses to those only those knowledge-based sectors of that use.
Sorry if I can just butt in without being too pedantic. That paragraph on the top of page 29 is the preamble to the policy. So it's not actually in the wording of the policy. It's the preamble to it, but it's still relevant.
I'm looking now at page 32, which is a penultimate paragraph. It says, once development becomes occupied, and then it goes on to say, an appropriate trigger mechanism should be detailed within the S106 legal agreement. Can you just tell me where that is in the agreement?
The detail is to be agreed at another date. The heads of terms sit within recommendation A on page 47. The first three parts, obligation one is travel packs, two is, so that would need to be defined and thrashed out and signed up to for the section 106 agreement before any planning decision can be issued.
Well, and that ought to be in there. Defined in there, as it says. It says that an appropriate trigger mechanism should be detailed within the S106 legal agreement. Page 32. Oh,
I think the issue is we're talking about the detail of the Section 106 agreement. I think in principle, yes, that could be incorporated.
So what you're asking, Councillor, is that these details be put in?
That is actually put in what we're agreeing tonight.
Another obligation, put these conditions in.
What we're proposing with the leave of the chair then is the point that you raised, Councillor Scott, in relation to public transport, that is a standalone. In other words, we add another obligation that relates to that and the trigger mechanisms you just read out.
I'm sure that will shall be read out when we actually make a recommendation.
And also that the proposer of the approval of acceptance would be agreeable to
yes,
that.
Yes, I'm agreeable.
Thank you.
I've just got two more little ones now. In the letter that came to Nigel Gould from BWB, and in the letter which is on page 59, again, on the last paragraph, says, as a result of the above, it's concluded that the northern site access should not be removed because it would prejudice the proposed hub connecting the eastern and western part of the wider science and enterprise park. I from what I was told, I didn't think that was going to, the hub was going to do both sites. And if it is, I'm just keen on knowing how we're going to mitigate the highway safety issues of people walking across Snellsnook Lane.
If I could, The hub that's part of this application only relates to this site. So the two red squares that sit within the red line relates to this application. But when you take the site as a whole, so the site off to the west, there would be another half that would come along at some point in the future. So I hope that answers your question.
And that's just to allow for the development to be comprehensive. So you don't want to separate them out. You want to give that opportunity. Obviously, if that side did come forward and when it came forward, matters such as the highway safety would be part of that consideration then, along with the reserve matters.
Just to help you with that, Councillor Smart. In the core strategy, page 123, para 249, there's a short paragraph in there that relates to land west of Snelsnook Lane, which we're considering this evening. What it says is, I'll just read it out, we do not want to constrain growth either for the university or the local and regional economy, and require land to the west of Snelsnook Lane to be integrated into the overall master plan, which includes the parameters within which we expect later phases to be developed as part of our strategic response. So that picks up that relationship matter. That relates also to a point that Councillor Smidovich raised about the status of the Hawkins-Brown report. Just for completeness, I'm keen to pick that up as well. Councillor Smidovich is absolutely right. The Council has not adopted the Hawkins-Brown report as a SPD, SPG, however you want to define it. However, again, within the policy CS23, one of the final bullet points in, relating to that policy, there is an obligation on us as the authority to work with the university and work with other landowners, in this case Wilson Bowden, to produce a flexible development framework. That's also referenced in your report, page 30 from memory. I think it's the last but one paragraph, and was contained in your previous report as well when you considered this matter back in November. And it's very clear that that is a material consideration in the assessment that we've undertaken to arrive at the phase-in and master plan development of this site. So those points are covered off, and I just wanted to raise that for completeness. Thank you.
One more point, and it really is backing up what my colleague, Councillor Lowe, said. I'm absolutely... Well, I just can't believe that the Highways Authority are not here tonight to actually give us some information. On previous occasions, they have come and have been a benefit to us in terms of understanding more. And I'm still concerned about Snelsnook Lane and Nampanton Road corner, and to mitigate what is there at the moment and the way that they're going to mitigate it, I find it very difficult to see that that is going to make the effect that they say. But I can't get any more information because they're not here. So it is difficult.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Yes, we can't speak on the wise and wise pause of other authorities' policy on attending. The only thing I would... coming, I've got Councillor Lowe, unless there's someone else that hasn't spoken yet. Very quickly, we have spent over an hour and a half on this now, which is fair dues. I'm not trying to stop anyone speaking, but what I don't want is to reiterate things. I think we also have to, and I think the officers, if they want to do anything, is a wind-up to say that any planning application, when it comes to roads and traffic, the applicant of a new application is not there to mitigate the problems already current in transport. We all have problems with traffic and everything, but just because they all they have to do is to mitigate for them stuff for what they're proposing, not for what is already there. Councillor Lowe, you wanted another points to raise.
Thank you, Chair.
And then,
I fully support your comments, Chair, about the mitigation on traffic. Don't make it worse. This is going to make it worse. I can't understand how highways constantly are giving this committee advice that I can't understand. Because I go out, I ride my car around the road, and I ride up Snelsnook Lane. I can't get through or out. I know there's no improvements to that site. And also, just a point of order, Chair, The officers are referring to pages in the core strategy. Those pages aren't in our core strategy in these documents. They're missing. So can that be rectified in future? Because you're referring to pages for me to read, and I can't read them because they're not there.
They're at the bottom.
In the black boxes at the bottom.
No, are we looking at these?
Yes. So what's happened?
They will be. No, don't worry, they will be missed. Okay. Councillor Campbell.
Yeah, I'll just go back to the farmland that's not going to be, it's outside the application site. Is that still going to be farmed? And if so, what roads will the combines and the farm vehicles be using? Because I presume the old track to the farm will be got rid of, will it?
I'll ask the officer. That is not really part of the planning application, and how the... Well, there's only...
I'll probably repeat what the Chair just said, that you're dealing with the planning merits of the application in front of you, but you'll see on the red line in front of you on the west side that Hurst Farm will still remain, so there'll still be the buildings and still be the track, and they'll still be able to get access up onto A512, even when that's the duelling's done. Quite what that farm is used for is entirely up to the tenant and the landowner, but doesn't form part of this application.
Well, I just mention it because Garrendon is still farmed, and the trouble that the combines and the farm tractors have on that busy road is laughable. So to say our ways it's not going to affect it is ridiculous.
Yeah, if I may, please. I just wanted to clarify, because we've had quite a broad debate tonight, and to just make it crystal clear before officers take their decision, that in the course of the debate, there has been some consideration of issues that aren't necessarily material considerations. I just want to make sure that members are aware that land deals, land values, the identity of the applicant, and future development of other land that is an application before the council or an allocated site would not be material considerations for this application. And secondly, can we just discuss from Councillor Snart's observations about the public transport? I just want to confirm the wording, because I understand the recommendations to be amended. So I suggest a amendment to recommendation A, paragraph 15, which would say an appropriate trigger stroke mechanism for the provision of public transport infrastructure. And if we can just check that those are seconders are happy with that wording, and councillors, any comments?
Right, we've got a proposer and we have a seconder. That we accept this officer's recommendation for this application with the addition of the additional condition as just been read out to you all. I want you all to think very long, and you will, I know, very carefully. If you do want, and this is refused by this committee, we must have very strong standing up condition reasons that can be supported by us all, and be prepared. I'm not blackmailing you, it's up to you. You've got to make your own decision, but you must give us the reasons if it does go to refusal. I'll just check whether any of the officers would like to say anything else, otherwise we will go to the vote. Right, we have the proposal, we have the seconder. Can I see all those in favour to accept officer's recommendation with the addition?
Just hold on,
I'll
answer for a minute just so we can check. Are we just having it right?
Thank you. Could I see all those against? Any abstentions? Therefore, I say that with the arrangements and the additions, this application has been approved, subject to all the conditions we have discussed tonight. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a long discussion. Oh, right.
Yep, just for the recording, if we can record, the vote was 8-4, 3 against and 2 abstention.
Thank you very much. Now, this has been a long talk, so therefore a long discussion, and I thank you all. We're now going to take a short comfort break, and shall we say 5 to 6 minutes? Wanted to say that when we had the vote for the last application, certain councillors wanted their names recorded, and I do have that Councillor Forrest would like hers recorded for
an abstention.
And Councillor Tillotson as well. Does anybody else want their name recorded? And Councillor Tassel, your name recorded? Yes. All right. Thank you very much. We now move on to page 61 of your agenda pack. And this is, you're all there and ready to go. If I can pass over to the officer, please.
Thank you, Chair. This planning application is for the demolition of an existing care home and its replacement with a new build 33-bed care home and associated works that go with that, including car parking and changes around the layout. Site location that we visited today, the site outlined in red is the application site, and the area outlined in blue is within the same ownership. It's also run as a care home and subject to a separate application for a glazed link between the two should this application be successful. This is the building, considerably nicer weather than when we visited today. That's the old part of the building, and if we flick to the next slide, this is a more recent addition linked to the older building by a glazed link. Just for context, this is the street scene, so you can see large detached houses and buildings, quite a lot of landscaping. There again, from the Ashby Road frontage, so it just gives you a good sort of view of the context that we saw. This is from within the site where we stood today. This just shows some of the frontage trees. You'll remember this pollarded tree here next to the entrance, and also you can't see the canopies of these trees, but some very large additional frontage trees. I think one of them was a cedar tree. This is the proposal. So, as mentioned, it is a complete demolition and it's a rebuild with a new modern building. A rear elevation. You can see at the back here, this is the sort of lounge area for residents, and the glazed link comes in somewhere in this area. Side elevations, just for context. This is a site plan. Apologies for the quality of the slide, it is a little bit blurred. This is the ground floor plan superimposed on to the site, which shows some of the trees. So you can see the trees here at the frontage, parking area here with trees in front of that. This plan I'll come back to shortly is a revised plan that shows parking arrangements on the site. So I'll return to that in a little while. Just to give you an idea of the internal design, this is one of the floors, so you'll see that it's a number of ensuite bedrooms. There are some sort of communal facilities, there's assisted bathrooms and there are catering facilities. One thing that I should mention is that this is a replacement care home, but it is specifically for dementia care. That's the proposal that's being put forward. So it is a very sort of specialised unit. Just as a comparison, this just shows the existing building and what's proposed. So it gives you an idea, although the heights are probably similar in terms of the actual ridge height is probably not dissimilar to the height of this building. It's obviously a wider building, albeit one that's set a little bit further back into the site. So you can see from here, this is the footprint of the building proposed. This is what's here now. So it's occupying a larger footprint, and height-wise, it's similar, but it's the proposal is less broken up into separate elements. In terms of trees, that's obviously quite an important thing, so I've included the tree plan. You'll see that there are three trees that are outlined in red. Those are the only trees that are proposed for removal. No, sorry, there's four there, can't add up. So there's three at the side here that we looked at today, and also a yew tree that we stood close to at the front of the property. This bright blue area is the area where the tree appraisal that's been submitted with the application recommends special measures in terms of the construction, so things like no dig, and that's because that is all within the root protection zone of a lot of the other trees. Now, I've listed on the slide those trees that would be affected. So the first bullet point is those that would be removed. Second bullet point is those trees that would be impacted, but there could be mitigation measures that would protect those. But it's also important to consider that the tree report outlines trees on the eastern boundary and does point out that there'll be some canopy pruning to those to provide building clearance. So that's a consideration to have in mind. The key points for the application, really, the two first ones are the big ones, because that's what the balance is. In principle, it's within Loughborough, sustainable location. It's a type of housing that the HEDNA report and the policy documents that inform us for housing need say we need. We've got an ageing population. There is a need to care for people with conditions that might be brought on by ageing, such as dementia. So that has to weigh heavily in the planning balance in favour of the development. However, the key issue with that is that this building is located within a conservation area. It's in the Ashby Road conservation area. It's actually identified in the conservation area appraisal as a prominent building. So it is important to the significance of that conservation area, and that's due to the fact that it's a typical large building in landscaped parkland-type setting with mature trees, and that's one of the things that Ashby Road has as a key characteristic. It's also, as part of the consideration of the application, been identified that the building itself is a non-designated heritage asset. So that's two slightly different tests in the NPPF. The first test, the significance of the conservation area, we have to acknowledge that there would be, or it's our judgment, that there would be less than substantial harm. So that has to be balanced against the public benefits, which are those that we've outlined. Bearing in mind that there are other uses that the building could viably be put to. So it's not the only use that building could be used for, so it's not necessarily the optimum viable use. In terms of the actual non-designated heritage asset itself, that's a balanced judgment. So again, you have to ask yourself, how much harm would there be to that asset? Well, it would be total harm because it would be lost. And then how important is that asset? So both of those get weighed into a heritage consideration, along with, of course, the duty to conserve any heritage asset, which it's our judgment that this proposal doesn't do, because it takes away something that's identified as important and replaces it with something that isn't felt to be in context for the conservation area itself. So that's the essence, that's the tricky bit of the balance. In terms of the actual design of the building, yes, it's a very modern, contemporary building. It does take some cues from the surrounding area. However, it's a considerably larger massing than what's there now. The trees are a very important part of the area. Some of those are going to be lost. Some of those are going to be eroded. So the character of the area in itself would be altered by, or it's our view that it would be altered by the changes to those trees. The last three points on here that were all mentioned in the report, the actual amenity of neighbouring uses. I think there's student halls either side and obviously the other part of the care home to the rear. Those would be unaffected, so there's no issue in terms of amenity. Ecology and drainage require additional information to form a judgment on those, but that, if members were minded to approve, that could be dealt with by way of condition. And just to explain, the ecology issue is that there is the possibility that there could be bats in the building. We don't know whether there are or aren't, because the survey, the initial phase one survey, hasn't been provided that gives us that information. In terms of the actual drainage, we just need some further detail in terms of calculations and so forth, but the lead flood authority are happy that that could be dealt with by condition if needs be. Thank you, Chair. I do also need to point out that we've reviewed the reasons for refusal, and on your extras report, we have suggested amendments to the wording of the heritage reason for refusal that we've put forward. The reasons for those are just to make that reason tie in more closely with the process that's set out in the MPPF that we have to follow, and to make it quite clear that there are three distinct heritage judgments that are all combining to form the overall conclusion on heritage. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We have some speakers. The first speakers are Mr. Bradwell and Ms. Johnson. And are you sharing the time between you? Thank you. I'd like to take a seat. And you may have heard how I explained it before. It's a green, amber, red. When it gets to amber on the traffic light system, you'll get a buzzer, and that will give you 1 minute left to speak. May I ask who's speaking first? Right, Ms. Johnson, when you're ready, if you'd like to press the button on the speaker. Thank you.
Thank you. My name's Ruth Johnson, and I'm chair of Loughborough Abbey Field Society. Society, as you may know, has operated in Loughborough since the mid-1960s, initially providing sheltered houses across the town. We're therefore very much part of the community, with many of our residents, staff, volunteers coming from the local area. We were bequeathed to Ingleside, our property in Ashby Road, in the late 1970s, and it became a 9-bedded sheltered house. And in the garden was built our residential home, which opens onto Westfield Drive, and provides 31 residential beds specialising in high-quality dementia care. We're a charitable organisation and therefore not-for-profit, but we still need to cover our costs. But we do ensure that we pay our staff the living wage. We typically charge less per week than other residential care providers in the private sector, but we are also able to meet the needs of residents with dementia that other care homes aren't able to. There is significant demand for dementia care services, as illustrated by the Leicestershire County Council's Accommodation Strategy 2016-26, which projected an increase of 69% in Leicestershire by 2030. We've also seen a demand for sheltered accommodation decline as people are encouraged to stay in their own home longer. We currently have 31 residential beds, which is too small to be viable, and we are losing money. The new private sector homes we are seeing are at least 60 beds plus. If we get planning permission, we would have an additional 33 beds, which will enable us to continue to provide our services in the heart of Loughborough. If we don't get planning permission, there are some big financial decisions to be made which could result in us closing our facilities with the loss of our current and future dementia beds in the centre of Loughborough. Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to mention that the headlines from the Daily Mail in August this year noted that hospitals take 1,000 dementia patients a day. And a lead item on yesterday's BBC News also raised issues about the need for dementia care. So this is clearly an important issue. We consider that there is a strong planning case to justify these proposals for a new dementia care facility. And this comes across very clearly in your officer's report. There are no planning policies in the core strategy that directly relate to this type of development. But the National Planning Policy Framework makes clear that local planning authorities should support development that addresses identified local health and wellbeing needs, and that specialist housing, including for people living with dementia, should be provided. These aspects of the NPPF are not necessarily mentioned in your officer's report, but they demonstrate strong policy support for these proposals. Hedner makes very clear that dementia facilities are different from and are in addition to the provision of extra care housing for the elderly, and it projects an 80% increase in people living with dementia by 2031. To meet this need, Hedner suggests that up to 88 units a year should be provided within Charnwood. And whilst your officer's report suggests that there may be other sites that could provide dementia care facilities, there is no evidence that any have come forward, and as a consequence, there's a serious shortfall in the provision of specialist dementia care facilities in the borough. In terms of the new build, a great deal of effort has been put in to ensure that the proposed new building is of a high-quality design, and your officer's report is very supportive of the design approach, considering it to be carefully conceived within the conservation area. It also reflects the design and appearance of a previously approved extension to Ingleside. The principal objection is obviously on heritage grounds. And whilst the site is within a conservation area, the original character of the area has significantly changed, particularly with student accommodation. In Abbeyfield Society's expert opinion, Ingleside is not a suitable use for dementia care. But your officer's report suggests that it could be used for other uses. In this location, that's probably going to meet student housing, and you should ask yourselves whether this would offer a greater public benefit than these proposals for a dementia care facility. The National Planning Policy Framework provides very clear guidance that allows any harm to the conservation area to be weighed against the public benefits of the proposals, and we think sufficient to justify the demolition of Ingleside. We consider that we've presented a compelling case that more than justifies the need for dementia care facility in Loughborough, and we would ask the Plans Committee to support this proposal, as it will meet a clearly identified local need, offering substantial public benefits that allow the normal planned objectives to be set aside. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Councillor Parton. Thank you. What will be your choice? Now, in the past, this story begins over 50 years ago. Did you know one of the thousands of men and women from our community who, when at their end of life, weak and ill, were cared for at Abbeyfield and died a pain-free, dignified death? The ladies and gentlemen behind me, to a person, all do. Five locations in Loughborough, now, past, present and future, a not-for-profit establishment. Abbeyfield makes no money from illness. And present, now two Loughborough locations with the application you must decide on, the one specialist dementia nursing care unit, with a non-used building that it cannot use. And this story is therefore a struggle, because in 5 minutes' time, Abbeyfield needs your help to overcome this struggle.
because the charity cannot cope with the huge dementia demand. And the struggle is seen in three stark figures, and then one choice between two options. A forecast increase of over 80% in dementia cases in Leicestershire. Abbeyfield has 31 beds. Abbeyfield requires another 33 beds to survive financially, meet this huge demand and help CBC to meet its head numbers for dementia nursing provision. And the one choice between two options. And before we consider that, it was said, when you make a choice, you also choose the consequence. You have the authority to reject the need for dementia care and instead retain this non-listed building for HMO purposes. Now, why do I say HMO purposes? Because in 2016, nearby 194 Ashby Road was recommended by officers for acceptance as an HMO. This committee rejected it on community imbalance, and the appeal inspector ruled that you were wrong. So if you decide that this non-listed building, which three student landlords apparently have wished to purchase, has more value not for the Abbeyfield charity, they very well may have to leave the site entirely in order to survive financially. Remember, the industry standard for dementia care is 60 beds minimum. They have 31. So, of course, then the Westfield Drive site becomes unsustainable, and that would also have to be sold, possibly for student accommodation. And then Charnwood Borough Council fails to meet its Hedner figures, a deficit in care. So decision time has now arrived. So here are some tools to help you. Material planning conditions, impact on the community and other services. Your lasting contribution to the dementia sufferers, our community and Charnwood Borough Council's Hedner figures will be a sympathetically designed new nursing unit in a conservation area. No further student HMO buildings in this area, already so heavily studentified, and helping Charnwood reach its Hedner care numbers. Or, if we refuse, we surely herald the end of 50 years of Abbeyfield dementia care in Loughborough. Imagine in your mind's eye all of the ill residents being taken out one by one out of that home, and in its place in the future two large student HMOs, which the inspector would most likely pass. All because we wish to retain a non-listed building that required huge renovation. You have the planning law on your side, you have the legality to do this morally right decision. And I ask you, what will you choose?
Thank you very much, Councillor. I would just like to reiterate, before, as I seem to at most of these meetings now, before I pass on to the officers and then open it up, we have nearly every person wanting to speak, is the fact that we cannot presume future use of any building or site. We are only looking at this application, not what might or may not happen in the future. And I think now I'll pass over to Ms. Jackson, and then I'll start on the speakers.
Yeah. Just to cover a few bits, I'll pick up on the same thing. HMO uses, possible future uses, members will have to disregard that. The current use of the building is as a care home, so any other use would require planning permission. The second thing to say is this isn't an easy decision. That's why it's at Plans Committee. It is a balance, and it's a balance between the impact of the proposal on the heritage assets versus the public benefits of the development. Now, the Planning, Listed Building and Conservation Area Act 1990 puts a duty on the local planning authority to have special regard for the preservation and the impact of development on the conservation area. You know, as we've already rehearsed, there's also a lot of tests within the MPPF that says where we identify those harms, they have to be outweighed by the public benefits. Now, as officers, we've made that balance, but it is within the gift of this committee to make sure that the right weight's been attached to each side of that balance or whether the balance is different. You know, that's why it's come to Plans Committee for you. I think members have to look at both of those sides in turn. That would be my advice. Look at the harm. Look at the impact of the development, both on the non-designated heritage asset and the heritage asset, which is conservation area, and then also look at the public benefits, and that should help you come to that balanced judgment.
Thank you very much. Councillor Lowe.
Thank you, Chair. I wish I didn't know about the dementia. And like, you know, the officer's just said, you know, we've got to look at this as a planning thing rather than about what it will be used for. I've got family members that suffer from dementia.
Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. It's just... I don't want you to go, to misinterpret what I was saying. The use is clearly the use which is being proposed. That does have public benefits, so that would weigh in the public benefit side. So it is relevant to the members round this table what the proposed use is.
Before I was rudely interrupted, Chair, I was coming on to that. You know, there is a major problem with dementia care in not just in Loughborough, but in the whole of Charlesborough. In fact, it's probably the whole of England, if not England, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and everywhere else. But looking at this as a planning thing, I feel I've got no choice other than to go with officer recommendation. But on that, I would like to apologise to the members that I pulled up on the last application for proposing officer's recommendation before it went to debate, because I'm going to do exactly the same thing here, Chair, and propose officer's recommendation.
Thank you very much, Councillor Lowe. Councillor Ransom.
Well, this is a needed facility. I actually going to ask the officers, and they don't have to answer me. Advisory when the people came for when the came Abbeyfield came for design, were they not asked if, because it was in a conservation area and because it isn't a listed building, were they not? How were they advised in the sense, or did they not come for advice? Because could we not keep the existing building, knock out the shell, and have the same facility for the people in the area? That's my first question.
It's my understanding that there was a previous application that was approved that did have an extension and retention of the building. Now, I'm not the officer that dealt with the application, so I wasn't privy to the discussions, but from what I can see on the file, it appears that might not have been viable for the applicants, because obviously that's a more expensive option than a complete rebuild.
Yeah, so if I just take out officers to page 65, that's got the planning history on. So there was an application in 2007 that replaced that newer annex building but retained the original house. That's got planning permission that would still be could still be implemented. But obviously we have to consider the proposal in front of us. With regards to this proposal, there was no specific pre-app. However, it should be noted by members that the design has been amended through the course of the application to take on board some of the Borough Council's design officers' initial concerns, and they have all been taken into account in the revised scheme.
Okay. This is a charity, and it's a necessity. You know, from my background, I will actually have to sit on the fence here and see what all the other members of the committee are going to suggest. But if it was, I'm actually going to put in, and the chair is going to go under the table when I say this word, I am actually going to probably laterally ask for a deferment on this so that advice can actually be looked at, because I think it's a need and a facility that is required within our communities.
Sorry, on what grounds, Councillor?
On the grounds of design, and it's not a listed building. And it's in a conservation area.
In terms of design, we have to consider what's in front of us, and that is the design being proposed by the applicant. Design is covered in the report, and it assesses the design in front of you. Members will have to consider design themselves. Now, if members are of the mind that there are design concerns as well, then obviously it's for you to make whatever decision you want to make, but you do have to consider the design in front of you.
Councillor Tassel.
Well, I really do commend the work that the Abbeyfield Society do. I mean, they do some fantastic work. But surely this building, it's out of context with the whole area. And they've had the extension next door done, which actually enhanced the main building. And the reason I wanted to defer, and I agreed with Councillor Ransom, was because I felt that it's rather cruel to refuse it outright, but to defer it so that they can come back to us with a design that is in keeping with the area. Now, OK, we probably can't do that, but that is what I would like to see, rather than say to them, we'll refuse it. I would like them to have the chance to come back with a design that we can look at, and it will look right in that area.
If you're looking at a fundamental redesign, that is a new application. And as if it was a design tweak, then obviously we can look at it. But if this isn't something that you can overcome by reason of condition, you have to consider the application in front of you. Also, as you know, we don't have forever to determine applications. There has been an extension of time agreed on this application to allow members to consider it today. And from what you're saying, you're not talking about design tweaks, you're talking about a fundamental redesign, which should really go through a proper process of pre-application advice and a new planning application.
In that case, I don't think Councillor Lowe's proposal was seconded. I will second it.
So if I understand it, you're seconding the proposal from Councillor Lowe.
Which was to go with officer's recommendation.
Yes. Thank you. I have Councillor Bedley.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I was going to second it, actually, Councillor Tassel, if you hadn't. I fully support the work they're doing. I think it's absolutely fantastic. They need all of our support, but this in that area, to take away a heritage asset to be replaced with this would just be wrong. I mean, a redesign, that means a new application. If it came forward with a new application, I'm sure that there'd be a lot of support here without preempting anything. But this, for me, doesn't work, so I'll support the officers.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Councillor Forrest.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I think this is a very difficult decision for us to make. And I'd like to begin by saying, I think some of you know, before I retired, I worked with dementia patients and their families as a care worker, or case worker, rather, although I never had any contact or association with the Abbeyfield Society. I have to start by saying that I would be very sorry to see that lovely house go. It's a very fine building, and it certainly enhances that area of Ashby Road. It's been there a long time, and it is a very fine building. I'm not going to speculate on... It's been empty for a year, I understand, and I'm not going to speculate on what else it might be used for. But it may go back to family accommodation. Who knows? I would also be very sorry to see the loss of the trees on the site, all of which are native British trees. However, nationally, we are in desperate need for purpose-built, high-quality accommodation for dementia patients run by reputable companies, and Abbeyfield is certainly that. And by 2030, it is estimated that there could be 1 million dementia sufferers in Britain. It's a terrifying thought. There is not enough of this kind of accommodation. And I would say to other members who have raised the issue that what looks like to me like an arts and crafts building that would not be easily converted into the standard of accommodation needed. It would be all sorts of little nooks and crannies and steps down and steps up, and because what is really needed is a modern building like that. Everything, each floor will be on one level. There'll be modern lifts, modern facilities, ensuite bathrooms, special bathrooms where assisted bathrooms. It will be, well, I don't know if it will be state of the art, but I think it will be an extremely good facility. And I have to say, I've heard everything that everyone has said, but if officer's recommendation was to accept, then I would support it. Yes, we're going to lose a very fine building, but I think they're all, I think the prospect of having a purpose-built dementia care home in Loughborough outweighs the harm. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Councillor. Councillor Bailey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think, like everybody's already said around the table, I commend what Abbeyfield do currently and what they are proposing to do. I have to say I'm completely on the fence on this one. I could go either way. I agree that the loss of the existing building would be detriment to the area, although if you look at other buildings in the area, would it necessarily? The new design is quite an imposing design in comparison, but then the facilities that that provides is very much needed in the area. So like I say, I'm completely on the fence on this. If we were to go against officers' recommendations and accept this application, would it set a precedent in the area?
I don't believe so. I mean, this is a very specific application in front of you. And as I said at the beginning, it isn't an easy decision for members. It will come down to the balance of the harm against the benefits, which on other applications would do the same. So you'd be starting again with that balance. So I don't think it would set a precedent because you'd be made to judge it on its own merits.
Thank you.
Councillor Snart.
I'll not be so long this time. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I don't find this difficult at all because I look at this as the public benefit. And if you go to page 67, which is, I think, the fourth paragraph down, it finishes up, nevertheless, given national guidance and the aims of the core strategy, the weight that should be attributed to contributing to meeting this need is significant. And significant to me was the word that we should be looking at. I think the public benefit, and we've heard quite a lot of information tonight about it, and I think it's overwhelming in terms of where we are and what we can provide if we have this unit in Loughborough. When I turn to the recommendation and the recommendations for refusal, I can understand the first one, which is about the harm and the public benefit. And I think the public benefit outweighs anything that we're proposing tonight. And the other two, two and three, I believe could actually be done by looking at that through obligations and decisions and conditions. So we're looking at three is around drainage, and that would be through information about how they were going to do the drainage. And the other one about bats could be a bat survey. So I think we're only looking at the first one, in my view, and I would like to say that I could support this application and go against officer recommendation. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
We've already had one recommendation and seconder. Councillor Council.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, very, very difficult, isn't it? But I mean, my concern is lots of trees, lots of lovely building, which will change the street scene. Some people do get pleasure out of looking at trees and wildlife, because the wildlife will be lost. And they do get pleasure out looking at old buildings, which this town's lost so much of. So I'm on the fence at the minute.
Thank you. Councillor Grimley.
Thank you, Chair. Again, this is a difficult decision. The bat issue, I'm just slightly concerned about whether in accepting the principle of an alternate development here without even having a phase one type survey gives me a bit of nervousness on that side. If we were looking at the alternative use, well, the proposal of the care home here, it's use C3. Would there be a way that we could condition it that it is purely for dementia care? Is that something that we could do if we did go on to that side?
Yes, it is something that members could do.
You wanted to come back?
Yeah, I mean, if it does go ahead, wildlife-wise, could we have bat boxes and swift boxes put into the building, please?
If members were minded to approve permission, then there would have to be a number of conditions that we'd have to think about, one of which would be ecology. And what we'd be asking for is any impacts on ecology to be fully mitigated. So, those sort of elements could be things that could be used to mitigate. But without the assessment, I don't know what needs to be mitigated yet.
Councillor Bentley.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Looking at this, I've listened to what everybody's had to say, and it hasn't swung me at all. I still support the proposal and the seconder. However, if this was to come back with a different design, something that's probably more in keeping with the street scene, then I'd fully support it. I can't support this.
Hello, and then this is the last. Oh, sorry, Councillor Tillotson.
Thank you, Chair. I mean, I know I'm proposing that we go with officer recommendation, but please understand I do know there's a need for this facility, and I think it's perhaps something that the whole council should be looking at, you know, when we're drawing up our new core strategy. You know, there's a lot of areas within the borough that would have the area, the space to build this facility. It's wrong where it is, which is why I'm looking at it as a planning thing and not having my heartstrings pulled. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Tillotson, and then Councillor Tassel, and then I think we've just about finished.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with pretty much everything that's been said, really. I don't like the new proposal, and I am happy to see the existing building demolished because it's excuse me, clearly not fit for purpose. But I don't like that building. But in the end, which side of the fence do I come down on? I come down on the side of people needing care. So I won't be supporting officer's recommendation, although I can see if they come with a different design, I would have been much happier to support
to support the applicants.
Can I just come back that when we do the plans training, we are told, and it is stressed, that we look at the street scene, that we look at what it is going to involve. Now, this, look at this on the street scene. It's going to be nothing like the conservation area that it is. We're struggling to keep our conservation area.